Oh, I gotta find Eric Foley.
Yeah,
right. Okay, so we are talking about 5 minutes. We're running through a piece at the beginning of September about what presidential Whitlaw is talking about. Okay, let's get a 7 point for review. You don't have to respond to the video. We're gonna go through each one's cause for 5 minutes in order you guys accept it. So,
testing. Sit down, please. Hello.
Okay.
All right. Hello. Hello. Very nice. This mic does not work at all. Put your mouth right on it. Hello.
All right, is everybody please?
Hello.
Please.
It's graham.com.
Every minute you don't sit down is coming off the town.
Yeah, Graham like a crack. Not Graham like a Republican. No.
My mic is not live. You can't hear me.
Actually, back in the 70s, we used to call the Graham Sports the Graham Crackers. We can't do that anymore.
Right, exactly. I was just going to say,
yeah.
When she said that, I was like, you can't say that.
Can you hear me?
Oh, there you go. Very good. Okay, well, welcome to the final panel of Day 1 BloggerCon 2003. This one is called Weblogs and Presidential Politics. The way this is going to work is I'm going to talk for about 5 minutes. Then each of the representatives of the different campaigns are going to talk for approximately 5 minutes each, in the order in which they accepted the invitation, and then have a discussion between them, and then open it up to the audience. On this one, these guys have never met each other before. They're all from the Democratic Party. There aren't any Republicans on this panel. We did invite the Republicans, And we also invited, and we invited every Democrat that has a weblog, and, you know, these are the ones that decided to accept the invitation. And I'm going to go first with 5 minutes, basically just some ideas that I had. I wrote an essay about this in early September that sort of got us involved with the weblogs and the presidential campaign. So, and some of these ideas actually have been picked up by some of the campaigns. The first one is link to everything, which means basically don't just cover your guy and don't just point to the positive press. In other words, be an advocate for information as opposed to an advocate for your candidate. And assume that if you inform people, since you've got the best candidate, then you know, you're going to do the best. Bring on Pied Pipers, which means this was the advice that was given to the New York Times earlier, saying you don't necessarily want to only bring up people from within your campaign. Bring in people from the outside who have experience with weblogs as a fast way to grow your weblog effort, and also as a way to deprive your opposition of that talent in a strictly practical matter. Independent bloggers on the press bus. This is something that happened in the Dean campaign about a month ago. There was an interview with a blogger in the New York Times, and I'd never heard of this person. Went and looked them up, and they were a Dean blogger, basically somebody who, but they had presented them as an independent blogger. It's okay to have PR people on your press bus, but it's not okay to only have PR people on your press bus. You should have bloggers that are independent, that aren't supporters of your candidate. I was going to say not necessarily, but actually they should not be any more than you would only have reporters from publications that were only supporters of your candidate. Suggested advocacy guidelines before some of your supporters start flaming the opponents so that they clearly understand that that's not okay and it makes your campaign look terrible. It hasn't happened yet, but as blogs get used more in presidential politics, it's inevitable that it's going to happen. A very pragmatic thing, publish your schedule on your blog. Almost none of them did at the time I wrote this. That's changed rather quickly. They've understood why not make it easy for people to find the campaign stops. We're very close to New Hampshire here, and we go to lots of events. It helps us enormously just to know where they're going to be when. This is one that turned out to be very controversial because it was something that the geeks could flame me about. I said, don't make software. Stay out of the software business. The software should be agnostic about candidates, and in fact it is. So use all brands of software and let the software developers, you know, develop special features just for political weblogs, if there actually are any such features. When you accept the conflicts of interest of making software, you automatically make opponents out of the people who make the software. And then finally, speak about democracy. Talk about how wonderful weblogs are for generating, you know, democracy. Talk about Jefferson. Let a tear fall from your eye, you know. This is a wonderful country, and blogs are an incredible part of it. And also, offer hosting for people, not just people who are supporters of your campaign, but for anybody. And chances are, if you're hosting a blog for somebody who supports your opponent, it's a matter of time before you're going to win them over. You have a much, much better chance of doing it. So those were just some ideas coming from somebody who doesn't support any candidate, doesn't support a party, but does support the idea of using weblogs in the presidential and general political processes. So now I'd like to introduce the participants of our panel here. We've got Matt Gross. Matt, would you raise your hand? Matt is the chief blogger for the Dean campaign. Joe Jones. Oh, yeah. You may applaud if you want. Joe Jones. Joe, raise your hand. He is the chief blogger for Bob Graham's campaign. Eric Foley. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I will pause for the next two. Eric Foley from the Democratic National Committee. Excellent blog. I can't say how much I enjoy it. And Cameron Barrett from the Clark campaign, known Cam since 1997. He's a Pied Piper of the absolute first class, so it's great to see him again here at this conference. So Matt, let's start with you first. Matt, what's it like being the chief blogger for the Dean campaign?
Absolutely exhausting.
Is it? Are you exhausted right now?
Yeah. You know, it's fantastic, and it's just, it's really, I mean, I can't emphasize enough how incredible it's been. March 15th, we started the first Dean blog, and really had no idea where it was all going to lead. And on June 10th, we switched from Blogspot to Movable Type, and to me, that's when the blog really took off and really began to take on a life of its own. And it's kind of interesting, as we've been talking about, what would it be like if everybody blogged? And in a way, we have a sort of microcosm of what that might look like, I think, on Blog for America. Just to give you an example, from June 10th till a few days ago, we've had 100,000 comments. Yesterday, we had 2,200 comments. I mean, it's really pushing, in a lot of ways, both technically and editorially in terms of the management, all of those voices on the blog, so many people talking about it, such that now when I talk to reporters, I mean, they really have a hard time distinguishing what makes a blog without comments from a blog with comments. I mean, they really see that as a critical part of the blog. And, you know, so there's this huge community that's been built up around our blog. And it's interesting as well because, you know, when we launched the comments, I started the blog. I was writing for MyDD, and then I kind of hopped on a plane. And
for writing for what?
MyDD.com, which
what
is a political blog owned by Joan Armstrong, kind of an affiliate of Daily Kos. And I had been writing on that blog back way in the ancient history of January and February of earlier this year. And it seems hard to believe, but at the time, you know, Howard Dean had a great deal of buzz in the blogosphere. A lot of people on political blogs were talking about him. And the last place you would go for information about Howard Dean was to the Howard Dean webpage. So I thought, you know, maybe we can do something about this. So I hopped on a plane and flew out there and was the first knocked on Joe Trippi's door and said, you know, there's this thing called the blogosphere out there, and Howard Dean's pretty hot on it, and maybe we should start one. And unbeknownst to me, I had no idea who Joe Trippi was. He had actually been reading MyDD, and when I said I wrote for MyDD, he sort of sat up, said, "You're hired. Go get your stuff and get back here." So, and that's the history. But, you know, one of the interesting things, too, just sitting here all morning and the great conversations we've had, is the sort of I sort of came to it thinking of a blogger as somebody like myself and everybody in this room, somebody who has a site or at least writes on a site, sort of in that editorial, posts the entries. And when we first launched the comments, what I recognized for a couple days is people in the comments were calling themselves bloggers. I'm a blogger for Dean. And I had this sort of moments of, no, they're getting the definition wrong there. And then it struck me that it's the users and it's the grassroots and it's the people using this that are really going to define what blogging means and not any of us really sitting here in this room. So
I agree with you on that one. Yep.
Maybe they are bloggers. Maybe blogging isn't the form, but it's the attitude. You know?
Exactly.
I mean, I've had trouble finding the line sometimes when I look. When did I actually become a blogger? It wasn't when I started writing in reverse chronological order. I don't think so.
Right.
I mean, I think that it happened sooner. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Joe, tell us how Bob Graham got into blogging and what role you play in that campaign.
All right. Well.
And tell us how old you are.
I'm 19, first of all.
19 years old.
And yeah, I was just about to go home for the summer. I go to University of Florida.
Woo. Gainesville, by any chance?
Yeah, in Gainesville.
In Gainesville, wow.
Yeah, which happens to be Bob Graham's alma mater.
We have an installed base
school,
of two. But, what's the connection to Harvard Law School?
He went there as well. He went to UF and Harvard Law School. So there's a whole blast of coincidence going on here.
Wow.
Anyway, I was about to come home for the summer, and they sent out an email to all the poli-sci majors, and they said that Bob Graham's looking for interns, and I said, okay, that sounds like fun. I like Bob Graham. So I wrote him back. I said, I can do this and this and this and this and this. And then they wrote me back about a month later because they were really understaffed at the time, and they were saying, okay, we'd love to have you come in. And right before they emailed me, I got in clearance to have this surgery. So I said, well, I'm going to have the surgery in like a week. I'm going to be out of commission for probably a month or so. So I'm going to email you back as soon as I know when I can come in. Well, I emailed them back about a month later, and they said, we don't have any internships available. And I said, but you said you had one. And I just ended up going to the office and I said, look, what can I do? And it turned out that on the day I went in, one of their internet interns had left to go to Italy or something. So they said, okay, you can answer emails. So I started answering emails, and after a while they figured out that I knew HTML, and one of the internet director asked me if I wanted to be in charge of the blog. And I was thinking, okay, I used to have like a diary on Blogger. That's about all I know about blogs. So I basically taught myself CSS overnight and tried to act like I knew what I was doing. And we started up. At first, it was totally in-house. We wanted to test and get people acquainted with the concept. But it turned out that most of the Graham staffers didn't really get the idea of a blog, and we had difficulty explaining it to them. And we were looking at some of the unofficial blogs out there. There was one called Bob Wire run by a guy named Matt Klein, and I was getting emails from...
What time frame was this?
This was in July. Late July, mid-late July. So I just started recruiting bloggers from the amateur sites and also from the people who were emailing us. And we had a pretty decent, posse of bloggers who we could put on our blog. And so it sort of turned into a multi-user blog. And if you go there at bloggram.com, it's almost entirely volunteers who run it. I'm still a volunteer. They offered to put me on payroll, but I wanted to go back to school. I didn't want to be like a dropout for Graham. But it's virtually all volunteers. There are only like really two or three staffers who ever posted the blog. And Bob Graham himself used to come on. He's been on a fundraising tour lately, so he hasn't gotten a chance. But it was a learning experience for me. I had to get involved with the blog world in about, a day. But I'm glad to be doing it, and I hope that it goes well into next year and well into the general election.
Good work. Right on. Hey, Eric, you're sort of doing the different thing here. You're sort of interested in all these campaigns, right?
Oh, definitely.
So what do you do? How did you guys start your blog? How do you run it? What role do you play in it?
Well, I'm the director of internet operations for the DNC, and the internet operations division is composed of me and one other person, a guy named Jesse Burney. Both of us have had blogs now for a couple of years at least, and earlier in the year we just started talking about, maybe this would be a good thing that, we could put up that would help us get some more content out there. The regular website, the old website as I call it now, it's press releases, it's occasionally longer form feature stories on this, that, or the other thing. The writing to publishing process can take upwards of a day, day and a half, depending upon what the vetting process is like. And there's a lot of stuff that our people see every day which never makes it out to the world because it's not something you can put in a statement by Chairman Terry McAuliffe, or, it doesn't have the kind of big issue front page story status that would make, the top story on the website. So, of course, Jesse and I are talking about this, and meanwhile, months and months go by. In the end, when we finally decided to do this, it was probably about a week of coding HTML and then writing the Perl code for the back end of this. We didn't use off-the-shelf software. I wrote the code based on some code I had originally written for my own website about a year ago. We tried to mimic most of the functionality that we saw out there. One thing currently missing is trackback, along with some other administrative stuff we want to add later. But once we had initial design, we went back to the group and said, here's what we want to do. And I was really expecting that we'd have a hard time getting the name past our communications department.
What is the name?
The name is Kicking Ass.
So you didn't have trouble getting that approved?
Surprisingly not. We presented it at a senior staff meeting, and we launched 2 days later.
Wow.
And really, it's so far it's been good. It's been a difficult learning experience for the staff because Jesse does most of the posting. He's our big writer. Our research department's gotten involved. Three or four people in them are writing stuff to post. We recently just got the head of our delegate selection process. Basically, he's the guy that's running the meeting that's currently going on in D.C., our biannual meeting. He's posting for the first time. We're getting more and more people involved. Ironically, it's our communications department that hasn't yet posted. But
how do they feel about your blog?
They like it. I'm not sure. None of them actually have any experience with this kind of stuff, so I think it's taking them a little bit longer to sort of figure out what to do with it.
And your vetting process, how long does that take? How does that work, actually?
This was tough because we wanted to make it as quick as possible, but we also wanted to have a little bit of CYA there in case one of us got a little restless. So everyone that has permission to post to the blog, which is 18 people in the building, is on a special blog vet. You put up a piece, or you get a piece ready, you send it out to the group. The group has an hour to get back to you. Doesn't have to be unanimous. Some people can say no, some people say yes. Majority rules. The only rule is if legal says no because you're breaking the law, it can't go up. And either our communications department or our research department has to be one of the yeses.
And other again, than the communication that, or research,
or our research department
have to be one of the yeses.
Right, because they're the fact checkers for the rest of us, so they ensure that we're actually.
And how many have been turned down or
Zero.
Zero. And how long does this process take?
We give it an hour. Longer on weekends when people are away from their email more.
Have you had any breaking stories on your blog yet? Anything that really couldn't wait an hour?
Anything that really couldn't wait an hour? I don't think so. An hour is a pretty quick turnaround time.
Mm-hmm.
One little piece of news that we did break. This was a couple of weeks ago. There was a story. I can't even remember the name of the group now. Released a new study. We actually interviewed the study's author, talking about Bush tax cuts and the impact they have on spending and deficits and all the rest of it. And I thought that was a really good piece that we did, and it wouldn't have been anything we would have been involved in before we got the blog. This is not something we would have just done to put on the website. So it's making us do new and different stuff, which
we'll
is good.
We'll come back to you. Karen, tell us the story. You went after them, or did they go after you?
I actually didn't go after them at all. What was interesting, as recently as early August, I was attending dean meetups. And I was actually very interested.
Well, you got an offer to come back.
I was very interested in what Dean was doing, but I wasn't sold on it. Sorry, I wasn't. How's that? I wasn't sold on Dean, and so I started looking around, and I liked Dean, but I wasn't really sold on him. So a former boss of mine, Josh Lerner, who's now the director of technology at the Clark campaign, called me up about 3 weeks ago, and he said, Wesley Clark's going to announce next Wednesday. Do you want to go down to Little Rock? And I had to actually quit my contract job and drive down there 2 days later, and I've been there ever since.
Wow.
Yeah, so anybody who knows my history in weblogs, I've been doing it for a very long time, and I understand the community very well. Like Matt, I find working in a political campaign very tiring, very fatiguing, but also it's the most exhilarating, exciting, and most phenomenal experience of my life, and I plan to keep on doing it.
Excellent. Maybe that's an experience a lot of us can have at some point. I mean, I find it very exhilarating. I just want to say this, from my standpoint, watching what you guys are doing, I think you're reinventing our political system, and I don't know where it ends. Matt, let's try it out. I mean, you're doing how many comments a day on your site?
Well, yesterday was 2,200 comments.
2,200. So, yeah. And and that was over how many posts?
That was over. We're doing on average 12 to 13, 14 posts a day, and we pretty much run the site 24 hours because we're at a traffic level such that if we leave, you know, especially during the week, if we leave a post for more than an hour and a half, the comments, you know, will get above 200 to 300, which in movable type, it seems to me to be.
It bogs down after that, is that it?
Well, it doesn't physically bog down, but, you know, for the readership, it's hard to read, so you kind of keep it moving. So
yeah. What's it going to be like in a month from now?
It's going to be even bigger. I mean, it's incredible.
So what are you going to do?
Well, I've hired two assistants. To
Well, but that's Mythical Man Month.
Yeah,
there,
exactly.
Right? I mean, what happens? I mean, you know, as you pointed out, no human being can read 300 responses or 1,000 responses to blog posts. So how do you spread this thing out? Or
well,
do you? What do you do?
You know, it's a big question. I mean, I don't know in my experience of any blog that is sort of reaching these
level
of saturation.
I don't think any of these guys are at that level
right.
at this point.
So I mean, it's actually
like to be there, right,
what
Ken?
I'd like to throw open to all the people here who, I mean, I'm a writer, so the people who are far more technical than I am is what are some of the solutions? You know, one of the ways that the Dean campaign, the Internet campaign, has built itself, it's really been an open door where I was the first person to walk through the door and say, let's start a blog, and boom, we started the blog.
Right.
And then we brought Zephyr Teachout, who's a co-blogger with me, over from the field department to work on internet organizing. And we brought Nick O'Malley up to be the webmaster. And now we're bringing in more people and sort of expanding. But it's really, I mean, it's really the type of campaign where if you have a good idea, the door is open. And one of the good ideas that still has yet to be come up with is, I'll just say, as software companies say, when we win the nomination, how does one deal with the fact that you're going to become probably, you know, one of the largest sites, certainly in the United States, with a huge amount of traffic and commenting? And
well, as I'm a software designer.
Yeah.
So what I would do is ask you to pop up a level and say, okay, let's take your assumption at face value that you do become the nominee and your blog becomes the highest traffic, most commented.
Yeah.
And I'm going to open this up to any of you guys because
sure.
you're allowed to make that assumption too, especially the DNC.
Because one of us will have that problem.
There's an absolute certainty the DNC is going to be involved in whatever
yep.
you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it you're trying to accomplish with your blog? That's when you have the answer to that question, then the solution falls out. In other words, you know, do you value a lot of comments?
Well,
do you want the user experience
well,
to be?
It's the same message of the candidate in the campaign, which is that the only way to defeat George Bush is for everybody to become involved and to become engaged and to engage in the dialogue. And I think that's, you know, the appeal of Howard Dean's message and our campaign and our blog in particular is that it really is a two-way street. I remember when we launched the commenting system, somebody posted over on Daily Kos, just a comment, I wish I remembered and had linked to it at the time, but it struck me as a pretty amazing comment. The person said, there's a presidential blog with comments. We've broken through the glass ceiling, you know? And I think what that moment was the end on the internet of using the internet as just another broadcast medium for the political process and returning it to a politics of the grassroots and engagement where people can engage and discuss amongst each other and create connectivity and relationships and, you know, alliances and everything else. And our entire web's presence, not just the blog, is moving out towards that. We have DeanLink, which is a sort of social mapping software. We have Get Local tools where you can set up events in your area and find events in your area. And we're launching a forum. So partially it's a measure of spreading out the interest in commenting.
Let me interrupt. Why not spread it out all the way and give all of your members of your campaign their own blogs? That's the way the blog world would solve that problem.
Right.
In other words, you've got the centralization problem, okay? You've got the slashdot problem, but you don't have it in all of its dimensions yet. But it's reasonable to predict that you're going to have it. In other words,
right.
you know, we talked about earlier whether human nature changes,
mm-hmm.
and the assumption is it doesn't. So at some point, the process is going to sour, if it hasn't already, and you're going to start getting, the losers are going to start finding you, and you're going to get flamed incessantly every time somebody posts something, because you're centralizing. And they get a chance to come get that attention. The theory is you will get that at some point.
Yeah, well, there is actually a tremendous number of grassroots Dean blogs out there that are decentralizing, and we've just released these software kits based on Drupal that you can download and help a
Great.
Novice set up their own blog and, you know, step through and link it so they can do RSS and XML feeds, you know, from the main blog or from the site, you know, at their sort of interest level, you know.
Well, that should solve the problem.
So that solves the problem right there and gives more people different venues to go discuss Howard Dean.
So, Cam, are you going to offer hosting at the Clark campaign?
We currently have a plan in place to do something very similar to that. We haven't we don't have actual legal authorization to do it yet, so we're working through the processes with our lawyers to actually offer blog hosting for anybody who wants to write a Clark web blog.
What are the legal concerns?
Well, mostly slander, libel, those kinds of things.
So what do you all think about that? Do you think that's a good idea for them to offer hosting? Are you going to offer hosting at the DNC?
DNC is not going to offer hosting at this time, I'm pretty sure. DNC is probably not going to offer hosting at this time. This is something we're always asked, not just with respect to blogs, but just sort of generically. Why don't you host for all your state parties? Why don't you host for all your county parties? The fact is basically at a financial and technical level, we just can't. We're barely keeping our servers up now with just our stuff on it, and we just don't have the resources to become a free hosting service.
I mean, the Dean campaign has raised how many millions of dollars through the weblogs?
Through the weblog directly, I'm not sure, but...
Well, through the web presence.
Through the internet. The final numbers aren't out, but probably $7.5 million this quarter, and for probably... $11 to $12 million this year.
Don't you have a thermometer on your site, the DNC site, where you're over $500,000
for the month of September? Yeah, we did pretty well.
It seems to me you can afford to do some hosting. How much does it cost?
Not after campaign finance reform.
the Clark campaign's numbers aren't actually public yet. I do know them, but I can't say them publicly. But I can say that 2/3 of all the money raised between September 17th, when he announced, and the end of September 30th, 2/3 of all the money was raised through the internet.
So, Matt, do you have any advice for your competitors based on your experience?
No, but I'll be happy to tell them after the nomination.
Oh. Okay, let's try it this way. Cam, you have a lot of experience with blogs. Do you have any advice for your competitors?
For our competitors? I don't.
Or will that wait for after the nomination, too?
Well, I know that we're going to run into the same problem that the Dean campaign has right now with too many comments on a single post. We're already having that problem in a smaller scale. The only solution I can think of is to use the people who are commenting to your advantage and get them to start their own weblogs and start their own conversations, whether it's a hosted site with the Clark campaign or whether it's their own website.
Anybody in the audience have some questions? Yeah, Chris, can we get a microphone? Oh, you have a microphone,
yeah.
Right.
I want to know what makes a candidate bloggable. Is John Kerry bloggable? Is Joe Lieberman bloggable? Is George Bush bloggable?
Well, I think any candidate who's actually going to blog personally has to have charisma and has to have a personality, has to have the ability to write well. That's the last one's the most important, the ability to write well and have a point.
and so my problem with John Edwards' weblog and its suckage and his writing it himself, it's so frustrating. One supposes that he hasn't been freed up by his staff or by the process to actually write it. I mean, mm-hmm. And just for people who haven't seen it, it says, "Buy John Edwards on the campaign trail," and you go there, and it's all this typical, "I went to Texas, and the great people of Texas are going to," you know, the same old horseshit, and then you get Dean, who really can't write, but he's got a great weblog. So what happens in the back room? What does Dean say, and what does Trippy say? What does Clark say? What is the empowering factor for the candidate to blog and for the weblog itself to be genuine?
It has to be personal.
I'd agree with that. It has to be personal. And, on the Dean campaign, there is no committee in terms of what goes on the weblog. I mean, I run the weblog, and pretty much it's just my good sense and good judgment as to, you know, what goes up. And I think an hour in the blogosphere, one of the things that really attracted me as a writer to the blogosphere initially was as an op-ed writer who, you know, didn't have a weekly column. you'd write something, you'd send it out. Maybe a day or two later, you get an email back saying yay or nay. But even if, and even if it was published, you know, it was 2 days later, and you felt like the news cycle had passed. So how does the written medium keep up with the 24-hour news cycle of television news, especially if you're writing political commentary? And the blogosphere, that's is the answer to that. And, you know, I like to call the blogosphere has a 15-minute news cycle where, you know, if something's up, if you want to respond to it, you know, it's 15 minutes is about the time it takes me personally to write 200 words and put it up. And I think that really is what's exciting about the blogosphere is that it's constantly moving and constantly alive. And when you slow that down through committee, well, you slow it down through committee, but you also reduce the other attraction of the blogosphere, which is the uniqueness of the voices out there. And when you find a voice that you like, you come back to that person. And it's a person, it's not a team. There may be multiple bloggers on a team blog, and you may prefer one over the other. But I think you have to have human voices.
So do you think the DNC blog is a blog? Do you read the DNC blog?
I look at it every once in a while, yeah. It's a good blog. They're just getting started. But when DNC research team posts, I'm not interested because I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
That was actually that was a we actually wanted to post them by name. The rule is pretty much everyone has to be posted by name. Research put up a fight and said no, we're going to be a division, and we said fine. But we really wish they'd be using their names.
At some point? Do you think they're going to come out and use their real names at some point?
I hope so.
Yeah,
there's some really good people in our research division that write really good stuff, and I think it's kind of a shame that people can't know exactly who they are.
I'm interested in learning what the real impact of bloggers are on these campaigns. I'd like to know if you could put a face on the community. Who are the people? What are they saying? What are you learning? And then what are the campaigns doing directly to respond to what you're learning on the blogs?
I see the person who's the chief blogger, the person who's in charge of the blog for a campaign, as basically the chief communicator between the people commenting on the site and the campaign itself. So I read every comment that's posted, and I make notes of what people are saying and what they're suggesting, and then I write those up. A lot of basically technical ideas on how to improve the website, how to improve the blog, how to improve the campaign. When Clark spoke at the DNC fall meeting on Thursday, in real time, people in the comments were critiquing his speech and saying, here's what he did wrong, here's what he did right. And we wrote those down and handed them back to the speechwriters and said, here you go. Here's your instant feedback.
Yeah.
And
it sort of reminds me of, I remember IBM getting Product Announcement of the Year Award. What does it have to do with the policies as opposed to the communications?
What do you mean? I don't understand. What is it?
I mean, what about feedback about the policy of the candidate, not just whether they've got a good blog?
Policy doesn't matter.
What? You're joking, right?
Well, I'm saying Bob Graham has like the best policy out of all of them. He's the lowest in the polls. People don't care about policy. I mean, the average Joe on the street, and I'm saying average Joe because that applies to me, but the average Joe on the street doesn't care about policy. They don't have time to look at policy.
But don't you think that blogs are a chance for us to find out what your candidate?
Well, the blogs are a way to make community, and they're a way to create buzz, and they're a way to make. You know, there are a way to make the campaign look active, and there are a way to bring out that impression that people are part of the community.
I agree with you on that one. Just a wild guess that you're probably all alone on that one. Right. Well, yeah, I understand, yeah. But I'm. It doesn't go to the optimistic viewpoint, I guess, that we were talking about in the last session, right? I kind of want to hear that you guys buy into this idea that. We could elevate, we could have a real, I mean, we did this, you're probably too young to remember, but in 2000, we had an election that ended up in a virtual tie. It was a tie, it was in your
I remember
state.
That, I was cognizant.
I know, I was kidding. But
I was young, but I was cognizant.
It was in your own state of Florida that this whole thing melted down, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, why did that happen? Did it have something to do with the fact that all we were doing was trading superficialities and building buzz? They both built remarkably equal amounts of buzz, mm-hmm. right? Did that do anything for the Democratic Party, for example? I mean, it was disastrous for our country, it probably got us into, I mean, we're in a lot of trouble. I think we kind of agree on that, mm-hmm. right? Well, isn't that how it happened? People not caring about the political process in their country. I mean, my hope, I'm speaking for myself, is that the fact that you guys are using blogs mean that in some way you're serious about governing our country. If you're not, that maybe that has something to do with being the bottom of the polls. I mean, Matt, do you agree with this?
Or? No, actually, yeah, and I do, and I wanted to comment on something that I think is what blogs, I mean, you know, when we talk about blogs and linking to each other, when we talk about sort of the lateral sharing of information, in order for that to work, as opposed, you know, if you're a hierarchical campaign with the command at the top and the captains and the lieutenants and it just goes down, the blog is nothing more than window dressing on a hierarchical campaign. And the way it used to work is, you know, with before I think blog, and I think this is how blogging is revolutionizing presidential politics, depending on the internal politics of that the individual campaigns, is now you can comment, and whatever it is, whether it's policy or, you know, Howard Dean needs looser collars, or, you know, which, you know, we hear, you know, or the real-time commenting on debates and speeches and everything else, you get that real-time feedback, and you know you are talking as if you're in the room in Burlington HQ, and you really are, because we're reading it, and we're responding to it, and we're reacting to it. And the way it used to be is maybe you'd send an email, maybe you'd make a phone call, the lowest level staffer, you know, the lowest of the low, really, who answers the phone and looks at those emails would maybe kind of look at it, maybe not recognize if it's important, maybe it would never get up there. So now, I mean, I really think what you have is that lateral communications and lateral sharing of information at the national political level where, for example, just, you know, certain phrases and various things and ideas really come up to us from those comment threads.
I'll echo that.
I come from politics, and so my interest in blogs is sort of how we can harness this best as opposed to mm-hmm. bringing blogs into everything else. And, you know, I think that your attack was a little bit unfair because from my perspective, I do see blogs right now as just being buzz because, you know, this is the first, you know, election where they're really being used, and we have yet to see the results of what's happening. And so my experience has been, or my read of it, and I'll be honest, you know, I'm affiliated with another campaign, but is that...
Which campaign are you affiliated with?
Be honest.
Well, Edwards.
Edwards.
And I'm not trying to criticize anyone here, but I really want to know how we can best use blogs, because right now it seems like, you know, if 2% of the country is blogging, it's an amazing, amazing group of mass of people. But at the end of the day, 2% of the vote doesn't give anyone, you know, it doesn't get any of us to our goal. And for us, you know, from my perspective as someone who works in campaigns, you know, that's my end goal, is how we're going to get over that 50%.
Well, I'm going to grab this one. But your reporters, the number of reporters that are covering your campaign is not 2% of the population either, right? In other words, you don't ask that question. You don't demand that the New York Times and AP and Reuters bring you 2% of the people to report on your campaign, do you? Right? That would be an unfair burden. They couldn't. Well, I'm not so sure, but if you were to look at the trend lines, maybe you'd see that we're going in the right direction. I don't know.
Just in two quick things in response to that. I think, you know, one of the things that has been interesting about the Dean blog and Blog for America is when I started the blog way back in March, I thought, yeah, well, I'll get those, you know, people who are already on political blogs to come over and talk about Dean on our site, and won't that be cool? And what's been really amazing is how many people have come to our site. I mean, anecdotally, I only know it, but I would say 70-80% never knew the word blog before they discovered ours, and I think that's great for blogging. And the other thing I think that we were the first to do, and now everybody's doing, and it's great, is treated bloggers as critical opinion makers, which they are, no matter the size of their audience, whether they're Glenn Reynolds or, you know, just a local blogger. They have an influence and a realm of influence, and that's how politics works, is reaching out to leaders and letting them reach into their communities, however big that community
is. Bloggers are definitely early adopters.
Can I...
Can you guys expand on that a little bit? One of the things that the Dean campaign has done that's been remarkable is to embrace all of the other stuff going on that's not in the center, that they're not responsible for in terms of other bloggers out there, not just your official ones, but you guys have been thrilled with the blogs out there. Whereas the Clark campaign, at least reportedly, was not treating the independent folks who had been originally at the heart of the campaign as well as they would like to have been treated in the way they talk. So I'm really interested in how all of you are using the blog form externally to the official central campaign.
I can comment on what you just said. I wasn't involved in the rift, as they call it, between a couple of the Draft Clark campaigns. However, I do understand that there was some problems legally between one of the Draft Clark campaigns and the official campaign, and that was basically a journalist decided to make a story about that.
Yeah, this one comes from a 17-year-old student in San Francisco who's watching the webcam and chatting with me. And her name is Jean Lee. She's one of the editors of the Blog the Vote 2004 site that's running out of New Jersey and New York and San Francisco. And she says, will you guys just manage your own blog, or will you actually surf around to find out what other blogs are thinking, like our Blog the Vote 2004, and answer comments and questions that raise issues about the candidates from young people?
We are definitely embracing the people out there who have current weblogs, and we're tapping into them. We're finding the best and the brightest, you know, the blog stars, and we're recruiting them to actually blog for us. Yeah.
And I'd like to echo that. I mean, you can't. I mean, if you want to keep, if you don't surf and participate in the discussion that's happening in the blogosphere, all it is a reverse chronicle order of press releases. You know, if you don't engage in that online conversation, and we do that.
Same here.
Yeah, not too long ago, you know, my first stop in the morning was New York Times, and now it's not. Blogs are always the first thing I look at. Find out what's going on.
When your candidates win the election, what happens to the blogs?
The White House blog.
Have you discussed this at all? Have you had any internal conversations about this?
Yeah, no.
What about the Republicans? Do you think they're going to use weblogs? Anybody want to take that one? What do you think? What kind of competition are you going to face in the election?
I think George Bush's message is already rapidly spinning out of control. He probably doesn't need the extra fuel to the fire.
So you don't think there'll be a strong competitor in the blog sphere?
Right. I saw something earlier today that was actually a poem written by Bush. I don't know if this is true, but it was very interesting.
It must be true. It's in print.
I don't know if it's been authenticated, but it was very strange.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if the RNC started blogging. I have no idea what that would look like, you know, whether this would just be scripted press releases or whether there would actually be, you know, real human beings behind the scene.
They couldn't call it kicking ass, but what do you think they would call it?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
The elephant never forgets?
Yeah.
Blind elephant?
I mean, it's ironic because, you know, we paid really close attention to what the Republicans did online in 2000. I was at the DNC at that point, and in some ways they made much better use of the Internet than we did. And one of the things that they did was they specifically used it to target their base, to rev them up, to give them stuff each and every day by email, putting it on the website, stuff to get people mad at Democrats and get those people out to vote. They were not using it as a persuasion mechanism. They weren't using it to try to convince people who maybe were sitting on the fence. That's what TV and radio ads do.
So who are you talking to? Who's your target?
Our target is pretty much our base. That's the one lesson that we took away from 2000, was that at this point at least, the most effective audience that we can go after online are committed Democrats.
Are there Republicans? If you're a Republican, raise your hand. You have some. How do you guys feel about this? Feel your party is falling behind, or Tracy, could you get the microphone over there? We did invite we got a little leak basically that they had had a meeting at the Bush campaigns and had decided to do a blog, and they told us, you know, heads up, hold the spot for us. And I said, no problem. We're totally nonpartisan. But they never got back to us. So we don't have a Republican blog at this time.
Yeah, this time around, I think it's going to be, I'd be really surprised if they even bother. I know, one really popular political weblogger, Patrick Ruffini, I think he runs the Bush Cheney weblog. He's their big weblogger. And so about a month ago, or maybe a couple months ago, they put together the official site, and they were sending emails and stuff to sympathetic webloggers like myself about what you could do. And they had, I mean, what it ends up being was a little sidebar thing you could put in your weblog on news from the website.
Not a whole bunch.
It didn't interest me. I'm a Bush supporter, so. Right.
Glenn,
I just think they just got to do more.
I want to ask, you're a Bush supporter, aren't you? Are you Republican? Not a Republican.
Well, I worked on Al Gore's campaign
well,
in 88. And Bush, you know, we'll see. What I would say is, I said this on my blog a couple of months ago, that I think that they are really behind the curve on the Internet in this election cycle. And I actually got then a somewhat miffed email from Patrick Ruffini. If you're watching this, Patrick. he's a swell guy, but he said, "Oh, well, we're getting all this stuff," and then it just hasn't happened. And I have no special information, but if I were going to guess, I would say that the strategy is run by Karl Rove, and Karl Rove is big on control, and blogs aren't big on control. And I think, you know, I've been a big admirer of what the Dean campaign's done, because I think to make things work on the Internet, and especially to make things work sort of virally, you know, you get power by giving up control, in a sense.
That's exactly.
And I think that's a really hard thing for traditional political people to do.
I want to ask a follow-up on this one. So do you, no, I want to ask him a follow-up, and then we come over here. Okay. So do you think that, what do you think? Do you think the Dean campaign or the Clark campaign is going to make a mistake through their weblog? Is that going to happen because they're not being controlled?
Well, that's
right?
What the pros worry about, and you worry that you're going to have one of these kind of blow-ups, that something that somebody does that isn't really part of your campaign gets attributed to you. And you know, I remember, not that it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, but Pat Buchanan had this thing where some schlub working for his county operation in Florida had a Ku Klux Klan message on their answering machine or something stupid. I mean, really, it didn't have anything to do with the campaign, but it just hammered him.
So how does Dean get
plausible? You got to watch for that.
How do you give Dean plausible deniability? I mean, how can he disclaim something that you might say, you know, no vetting, nobody looked at it, you posted it, maybe you didn't understand how what you were saying could be interpreted. You cause a big scandal in the campaign, then what happens?
Well, I mean,
worry about that, I guess.
No, I don't really worry about it. I really don't worry. It's partially the size and scope of the campaign. Partially it's, you know, speaking and educate. You know, one of the interesting things about this election is the fact that this is the first introduction of journalists, and it's particularly a lot of political journalists, to blogs. You know, and I remember when Judy Woodruff first said the word blog on CNN, she was like, "Wow, we have to learn all these new words." You know, and it was a great moment. It was like, yeah. Yeah,
but now, when a president takes office, he has a honeymoon period where all the journalists basically have to learn the new names and
yep.
the new mannerisms, and you don't see very much negative press,
mm-hmm.
but they measure it in months, you know, the time it takes between the start of the presidency and the time that the knives are sharp enough to actually go in, you know?
Right.
So aren't you afraid? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that if I were you, I would be afraid that at some point, every word you write on your blog is going to be seen as an official statement by your candidate.
That's why I focus every word on knocking George Bush, because you're probably not going to get in trouble.
All right. Over there. Wait, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to make a quick comment on that in terms of, you know, in terms of our vetting process. Obviously, if we didn't have to have a vet, we wouldn't. But, you know, what I think worries me most about the blog isn't, you know, that something will show up there that's inappropriate, but that we're going to be attacked. You know, there's going to be DDoS attack, or someone is going to build a little bot that's going to make, you know, 500 comments a minute on the blog. And yeah,
right.
Exactly. So well, it's for us, the real concerns are on the technical end.
And I should just clarify our vetting process. I mean, I'm the director of internet communication, so anything that, you know, it just goes. But obviously, I use my judgment. If I'm not sure if it's something policy-wise, I'm not the policy guy, so I'll bring it over to policy. You know what I mean? So you do use common sense.
You should be careful.
Yeah.
A lot of our future is resting on what you do, in a sense.
Right? Well, exactly.
If blogs all of a sudden let's say, you know, worst case scenario, something appears on your blog, your campaign melts down as a result of it, and all of a sudden all the candidate blogs shut down, and everybody says, well, you can't do blogs, they don't work, right?
Right.
So we're all
there's that sort of risk in any kind of PR.
What's that?
There's that sort of risk in any kind of PR. I mean, not just in blogs. That can happen in any arena. The blog is just a different venue for the same thing we've been doing for. Decades.
And you really have to let go of that control. I mean, that's really what it's about, and trust. I mean, not only me as a paid campaign blogger, but all the people, the people comment, and you really just have to trust in people's maturity and ability, you know, to deal with their own democracy.
Sorry, I should have laughed when you said that, but in the blogosphere, I would not really trust the maturity 100% of the over there.
There are a bunch of ways to lose control. I'm curious, and I have to disclose, I'm on the board of Meetup. How do you do things like Meetup, Dean Link? Have you looked at LinkedIn or even Friendster, other tools in addition to blogs?
Have we looked at? Dean.
Using them. Can you talk about them if Dave lets you, because it's not totally on topic.
Right. In what way? In terms of how they might lose control? I mean, we definitely, you know, we go through, we make sure. I mean, and, you know, there's pranksters, you know, there's freepers. And anytime you give somebody the ability, basically a can of paint, to scrawl on the Internet, they're going to scrawl something, you know. And so you have to watch that out. But, I mean, we have a very wide, you know, as long as it's not vulgar, offensive, you know, we don't delete if a Kerry supporter comes over and tries to argue in our threads. I mean, that's fine. That's democracy. That's what this is about, is the discussion of why Howard Dean is the best candidate, you know.
One of the things that we do in a similar vein to that is that we let the community take care of these trolls. We let them tell the trolls to go away.
Right. And on the topic of trolls, because this is just really cool, and everybody likes the story. I mean, I did spend a lot of time when we did launch the comments going, gosh, what am I going to do about the trolls? And this is kind of how some of the neat ideas filter up from the bottom up, is what people started to do was they set up a troll fund where anytime somebody comes through on the Dean blog and posts a troll post, everybody jumps in and contributes $10 to the Dean campaign, which actually tends to stop them pretty quickly in their tracks.
Well, write that one down. That's
nice.
That's very smart.
First of all, I wonder if any of you would care to expand a little on what precautions you may be taking in the realm, sort of more technical precautions you may be anticipating in the realm of what might be called campaign cyber warfare, not just the overwhelming amount of number of posts, but other kinds of sabotage or whatever. And secondly, I'm impressed with the idea that people can post comments and that they can be involved in the ways that you've already described, but I'm also a little skeptical of how much this really represents any kind of real power or accountability. And just to maybe give you a way into this topic, would you consider, for example, institutionalizing a relationship to the candidate or the campaign by, for example, selecting one question each day from all of the comments to present to the candidate with a commitment up front that one question a day or one question, how, you know, with whatever frequency will be addressed by the candidate on a blog? Just as one example.
One of the problems that we face with that issue is we have plans to do something like that. The problem is Clark's schedule is insanely tight, and even getting 10 minutes of his time to answer a question is very difficult. You have to work very closely with the scheduling team, and they don't quite understand what a blog is, so it's an educational, you have to educate them first.
I want to go back to the 2% question, and of course, some small fraction of 2% would have swung the last election decisively one way or the other. And also, I guess it's worth pointing out that what the campaign blogs have already done is raise an enormous amount of money without relying on a single trial lawyer or their wife for funding. So I think we've already seen the effectiveness of web campaign weblogs. But one of the things we talked about on our journalism panel is weblogs as feeding the media food chain, not replacing the media food chain. So what I'm interested in, have you seen stories or comments or links on your weblog drive stories in the mainstream media? Have you seen that direct push that people see things on your weblogs and then they become news stories or they drive coverage?
There hasn't been one on the Clark blog because it's only 6 days old, but I did recently see the Valerie Plume affair with the CIA operative leak. That was definitely driven by the blogs and the independent media who pushed it and pushed it and pushed it, and then a few weeks later, the big media picked it up.
Jay Rosen, I want to ask a question about this issue of control, because I think this is really the most interesting thing about campaign weblogs. The whole wisdom of media politics that's been accumulating basically since the 1950s is to control your message. This is the whole wisdom of the handlers and the permanent campaign, that you can put everybody on message, decide what you want the headline to be on the evening news, make sure the candidate stays and says only that thing during the day, script your schedule so that the cameras are in place to catch the message. And of course, one of the consequences of that is that it centralizes control of the campaign in the one or two people who are assumed to be the wizards for doing this. So there's no question, I think Glenn was getting at this earlier, that if you just look at the campaign's web operations, the Dean campaign has the most open system.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I'm not necessarily a Dean supporter, even though my nephew works for the campaign. So here's my question to Cameron. Are you jealous of this openness factor? I mean, do you want the Clark campaign to become as sort of web literate and web open as the Dean campaign is
now? I wouldn't use the word jealous. I would say that we respect it very, very much, and we're actually taking a lot of their ideas and re-implementing them ourselves with our own spin on it.
So it is influencing you and what you're doing.
Absolutely.
I want to come back to the impact question. I want you to convince me that something really, as Chris would say, really transformative is happening. Is it just an internet phenomenon? Is it there's no doubt that a lot of people are going to the Dean site and talking to each other, ostensibly to the candidate. But I need you to convince me that something really significant, in terms of democracy and empowerment is happening, because I'm not hearing it.
Okay. George W. Bush on the last day of the quarter raised $5.3 million in $2,000 checks bundled in $100,000 and $200,000 bundles by his Rangers and Pioneers. In the last 10 days of the quarter, the Dean campaign raised $5.1 million in $87 contributions. That's how you beat George W. Bush, is by everybody doing their part and giving a little bit. Because the only campaign finance reform is going to come from people getting involved.
I mean, is it just about money?
No, it's not just about
money.
What
did you listen to? Wait a minute. Wait, what did you listen to other than their money? I mean, in what way did they influence your campaign? Let me just back up even one more step. I mean, as a person who believes in the internet as a communication medium, which I think we all kind of do, right? It seems a little galling to use the internet to raise money to buy TV ads. isn't that somehow? It's galling because we've got an incredible communication medium, and, I would rather see them use it in really creative ways, maybe not to require so much money,
or
maybe to do something different with the money other than feeding it to Hollywood, which I kind of think is the enemy in a way, more so than George Bush is even. I don't buy it.
I'll point out some guys, except for the Graham campaign,
can you get a microphone?
You
need a mic. The people at home can't hear you.
Time out. We
got to
get a microphone.
Yeah, the guys at home can't hear you. And they're all watching.
Yeah, because there's a webcast, and they won't hear you at all. You're just going to be like that.
And tell us who you are.
Tell them who you are.
Scott Heiferman from Meetup. So three of these guys here have had phenomenal mobilization of people. Talk about tangible. These people write letters when they go to meetups. They are doing phenomenal things. They've got something that they can take their non-internet friends to. Tangible right there.
Yeah. It really is about community.
I still don't hear, I mean, yeah, but that sounds like buzz, okay? I mean, I'm skeptical. I mean, I want to know, somebody asked a question and it wasn't answered, okay? How about getting the candidate to answer one question a day that came from the internet, and none of you guys said you'd do it? In other words, have you improved communication with your candidate at all? How many questions a day does he take from professional reporters?
Well, he takes...
What do you mean it's to it? Yeah. I mean, they shouldn't just want the money. I mean, I have the same problem with NPR, okay? NPR wants my money, but they don't want any ideas from me. You know, thank you very much. I mean, when it comes down to it, will Howard Dean or Clark in any way, I mean, will they use focus groups to decide what to say to win the election?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely. No, and I mean, speaking for, I mean, the dean can't, you know, we have conducted interviews, we have compiled questions, you know, we listen to what people say. As Cam pointed out, I mean, scheduling is a tremendous thing, and people have the opportunity right now of the general retail. Here's the fundamental question: does the internet work best for one-on-one communication, or does it work best for multiple communication between multiple nodes?
I don't know. It's a puzzle. I think we're all trying to figure out. I mean,
right, and it certainly is.
In a way, I liken what happened with Dean to the dot-com boom. Basically, you know, the takeaway on that, because now that it's over, is that people got excited about the internet and said there must be some value here, so let me make an investment. Somebody said, okay, here, I'll take your money. And then in the end, of course, it was it went like that, right? So if Dean doesn't do something good with the money,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's different, that somehow is internet enabled, my concern is you're going to see exactly the same thing happen.
Well, people gave their money so that Howard Dean could become the Democratic nominee and defeat George W. Bush, not necessarily so that he could invest it in the internet. Mm-hmm. And if people wanted to make that contribution, do you know what I'm saying?
I don't happen to agree with that.
I mean, the internet is the
how
it came in.
I think that people gave money. I've been to see Howard Dean speak. He's a dramatically good speaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to feel good about yourself listening to Howard Dean speak. But then you listen to what he's really telling you he's going to do, and it's a politician talking. It's not really that different from anything we've seen before.
Well,
I mean, he's a very good speech deliverer at a time when people really need something to hope for, right? But it's still all intangibles. It's still, you know, what?
I think the question now, which is really a good segue to my question, is with all this incredible money and this mobilization,
sure.
proven what a great tool the internet is, not only to get everyone involved, but to reach new segments, people who are not being reached in traditional ways. However, we also know that the traditional way to then go out and market candidates is on television.
Mm-hmm.
From your perspective, do you think, the same amount of budget is going to go to TV? Is any more money going to go to web advertising or web messaging as opposed to your campaigns? And B, what impact is this incredible power of Meetup and the blogs going to have? Is that going to creep into the TV campaigns? Are we going to see the internet having any impact in communications besides what it's done to get volunteers and money?
I think absolutely, and because it's not just about the volunteers and money, it's about what those volunteers are able to do in their own community and to be able to talk to people and to organize themselves when we're talking about self. Oh yeah, I think it's Howard Dean's message. You know, every time he's out there on the campaign trail, is that, you know, I mean, if you've seen his stump speech, I mean, he always says, you know, the lie is that if you elect me, I'll solve your problems. The truth is only you can do it, and that's factually true. I mean, I really believe that. Television advertising, I mean, obviously television still influences a heck of a lot of people, and George Bush is raising $200 million, and that's $200 million worth of television scripts written by Karl Rove for a primary in which George Bush is running unopposed. That's $200 million worth of Republican bombs that are going to drop on the Democratic nominee. And, you know, if you don't respond on television, you're going to be in trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really are.
Here have spent...
some time actually scrolling through comments on the Dean blog and really reading it thoroughly. I just don't think you can get what's happening there, because that is the blog. Those comments, they use that as their blog.
Mm-hmm.
And they use that thread. And I do know from experience, having spent a week up there and working for the campaign in various ways, that it's a permission-free zone. I mean, like Matt just drove up there and said, I'm going to start blogging. You know, he got hired, and I had that same experience myself. I didn't get hired, unfortunately. but the point is that the people who are there just show up, and the ideas bubble up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the same experience. You know, they've been in Little Rock for 2 weeks, and every day there are new people there who don't know what they're who want to do something but don't know what to do. It's truly the only word for it is chaos, but it's still very exhilarating.
Okay, so 2 points. One point is it's important to count the votes, not the money. When you look at all those people with those $87 contributions and you weigh two piles of $5 million, there are a lot more votes in those $87 contributions than they are in the big contributions. You need to keep
that's
that
exactly
in mind.
Right.
On the other hand, there's one thing about everything I've heard from this panel that I find vaguely disturbing, and that is if there's one thing we know about weblogs, they're about personality and charisma and hearing from the person with whom you think you're communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing I've heard from every single one of you sitting up there is that there's almost nothing in your weblogs that is about communicating directly with the candidate himself, writing for himself on the weblog and directly replying to the people who think they're communicating with him. And it seems to me, now I understand the time constraints. I understand the problem.
Sure.
Nevertheless, it seems to me that either people are suffering from a group delusion, you know, and if you're clever enough to carry that out, okay, fine, go ahead and do it. Or, in fact, this really has more to do with theater and the usual political spin than it has to do with weblogging. Would somebody like to comment?
Yeah, I think the distinct. I mean, it's a good. I mean, it's a completely valid point, but Blog for America is a campaign weblog, and it's not a candidate's weblog. And I really don't believe it's possible for anybody to run for presidency of the United States and to really run a weblog. I mean, one thing that most people understand, if you get a fundraising email or a fundraising letter from Bill Clinton, you kind of know that Bill Clinton didn't do that. But one of the things about blogging is it really has to be authentic. And, you know, when Howard Dean blogs, the reason it's infrequent is because he sits down at a computer and blogs, and it's real. And so if you want, at the presidential level, to have a candidate blogging, you're going to, I think you'll, like, frequently, I think you'll just end up with a ghostwriter, which will actually undermine,
right,
but at a lower level.
I want to rebut that, okay?
Sure.
You're limited in how you're thinking about this, because I can envision it happening, okay? I want to use Glenn Reynolds as an example. I don't think...
I was actually going to say, if Glenn Reynolds ran for president.
Exactly. You got it. That's where I was going, okay?
Well, right.
Now, all right, I wouldn't vote for him. I wouldn't give him a dollar, all right? But on the other hand, if he were to declare for president, he probably doesn't have enough pull to do it, all right? But imagine for a minute, okay, somebody who's a political blogger who really captures the imagination of the American people in a way that Howard Dean can't do, because Howard Dean doesn't get the efficiency of blogging, okay? In other words, Howard Dean, to turn you on, has to show up in person, okay, or run a TV ad. But we all know TV ads are, like, whatever. I mean, we've done that. We've been doing that our whole lives. Well, word of mouth, internet is an incredible word of mouth machine, and as Amy was saying, you don't put the guy out front, I don't know who you're talking about, but that's, you know. So, you know, there is a way for your candidate, and it probably isn't Howard Dean, and it probably isn't Wesley Clark, and it probably isn't Bob Graham, and it probably isn't any of those guys, and it probably won't happen in 2004, although things have been changing so rapidly that it still could.
I think you could see it happen in 2004 at the smaller race level. I really do, because it's a matter of time commitment, and a congressional race I think is an ideal level for especially like an insurgent candidate to use the weblog. At this point, I agree. I don't think the presidential level, the demands, you know, really allow that.
I tend to agree. Most of the people who comment on the Clark blog have no concept or even they have no way of understanding the intense schedule or understanding the amazing amount of time it takes to actually be a candidate in a presidential campaign. It is 24 hours a day.
Back there, Chris. Michael, tell us who you are.
Mike Clough, freelance writer. Two things. One, if you think the schedule is intense now, having worked on two presidential campaigns, it's nothing now compared to what it's going to be the week, the day after New Hampshire, which is the second question. I was just last week sitting in on a panel in New Hampshire that had all of the leading campaign spokesmen for all the main campaigns. And of those, in that whole discussion went on for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, the only time the internet was ever even mentioned was by one campaign staffer complaining about how it was creating problems because everybody kept showing up at their staff meetings thinking they knew more than the people who were running the campaign. The message of that is, what do you really think the impact is on a place like Iowa and New Hampshire, which ultimately in this phase of the campaign is what's important? I mean, Howard Dean will be a serious candidate or not a serious candidate based on whether he comes out of New Hampshire and Iowa ahead. And so,
well, I think reflections. I mean, I think one of the ways, I mean, the internet has had an influence on that is through our meetups in July. You know, everybody who went to the meetup at that time wrote something like 30 or 40,000 letters to undecided voters in Iowans, personal letters, like handwritten, about why they supported Howard Dean and why they would like that person as an undecided voter to consider Howard Dean. And we did the same thing in August to New Hampshire, where people across the country wrote and said, I live in Texas or California, and I'm for Howard Dean, and here's why, and I wish I had the chance that you have to really influence the race during the caucus or New Hampshire primary. So I think that's the way that the internet reaches out, because when it comes down to it, I mean, politics is still a person-to-person activity, and not necessarily the candidate-to-person, but what are people discussing and what are their influences. And I think human contact, that's the great thing about the blogosphere, too, is the human contact is so much more influential in the end than we would hope than television advertising, things
well,
like
that. Well, that's certainly the way the DNC is looking at it. You know, up until these guys decide which one of them is going to be our nominee, you know, we just sit on the sidelines, raise as much money as we can for the general. Now, when we get to the general election, the DNC's mission becomes mostly field work. It's our job to get people to the polls. The candidate takes care of the message. We do the on-the-ground work. And so for us, the big challenge for us online is going to be trying to find interesting ways that we can turn people into online activists and then take those online activists and make them offline activists. I think blogging is going to be an important part of that. And, you know, we've been working with Meetup, too, and quite frankly, we need about another dozen tools in our toolbox if we're going to be successful in 2004.
I think it's interesting to think about what you're doing for democracy. And I've often thought that the Democratic Party, which I've been involved with for a long time, needs to be more about democracy and less about promoting candidates. So with that said, I guess I got a couple of points where I'll agree with some of the stuff Dave said and disagree with one piece of it. The disagreement is this. This idea of having the candidates blog, it seems to me is consistent with an old idea of what a president and what the government is, which is it's kind of a big father. And George Lakoff has wrote this wonderful piece, which I think many of you have read, about kind of the images that sit underneath the two parties. And underneath the Republicans is kind of a strict father image. So you like kind of the tough father, but you also want small government because, you know, once you grow up, you don't want the father around. And on the, you know, Democratic side, it's the nurturant mother or the nurturant father. And the notion is that, you know, we're about taking care of the, you know, the needy and so forth. And I think today people don't want either one. You know, I really don't want government as my parent, right? What I want government to do is be, in some sense, the steward of the forest or something, or build a platform on which me and other people can be creative and can sort of co-create a world. And so for me, what's really interesting about what you're doing in these blogs is that you're actually creating a world or a platform. You're establishing a platform within which people can kind of co-create a world together. And that is what I want a campaign to do. And that is what I want you know, the party to do, and it's what I want the government to do. And I don't care if the candidate, you know, I want the candidate to back that and accept how that is and understand that, but I don't need that direct relationship because I'm not voting for a father or a mother.
This is all a very rude awakening to learn that these weblogs are not for the democratic process. They're to improve your candidate's position in the democratic race. If you really cared so much about the democracy, which you obviously don't, then you would have no problem giving each other advice about how to run a good democratic weblog, and you have no problem working together to give all of your activists their own weblogs and sharing resources. And I'm just curious to think that, you know, supposedly Howard Dean, with him, you're at his table, and I don't know about the other candidates, but the whole thing is, once Howard Dean is elected, you know that you're going to be able to sit at his table. And if you can't sit at his table now, what makes you think you're going to be able to sit at his table when he gets elected?
I'm not sure I follow why. What was said that made you think that you can't sit at that table or that?
Well,
it's not a democratic process.
You know, you've made it clear that he doesn't read the weblog, that he doesn't read the comments, that they're not.
I've never said that. I said that he doesn't have time to write a daily weblog entry. He actually, he does read the weblog. He doesn't read all of them, certainly. You know, that's sort of my job and the web team's job. And you know, that's, I mean, it literally takes me all day long to do that. And if Howard Dean were doing that, he would disappear in from, you know, the political landscape.
A different question, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think you're spinning us because the question was, would he respond to one question a day?
Yes, and he he has responded to comments in the threads. In fact, much to our surprise, where we discovered Howard Dean in there.
Was the question that was asked, and he didn't say yes. So,
devote any time to it. On one hand, it's important, and on the other hand, you're not going to devote any time to it. So, which one is it? I'm not anti anybody up there.
Right.
I'm just equally as confused. Which one is it?
We've never said he doesn't devote any time to it. The notion, though, I mean, I believe, my personal belief in terms of weblogging is it really is a full-time labor of love to really work it and get it going and keep it going. So Howard Dean can come in and post, but, you know, certainly, you know, he's on a plane offline for 5 days.
I have a question. How many people here have gotten so busy in their professional lives they haven't had time to post for a few days? Raise your hand. Thank you.
I didn't raise my hand, by the way.
just to chime in on this, I mean, I don't think a lot of you guys realize how busy a candidate is in a presidential campaign. I mean, I can understand.
But then
completely.
He asked the question. Wait a minute. He asked the question: is if they don't have time for the community now, what? Why would you believe they'd have it for it after?
Just because they can't go in and do a Q&A each day. I just think the whole concept is wrong. I mean, there are a lot of things that a presidential. I mean. I'm up here defending all the presidential candidates. But,
yeah, I wonder why you are. I mean, is there anything different here? Are we? I mean, we've got blogs in a candidate campaign, but is there anything different going on?
I think each of these campaigns have already or are reaching out to a lot of different bloggers. They're certainly doing more, you know, Q&As and stuff like that. They have blogs that aren't just, I mean, There are some candidates out there that have blogs that I can tell. I mean, I know how communications offices work. They're basically just stuff put out by a communications office. I mean, obviously the Dean campaign has made a huge priority of its web blog. It's a huge part of that operation. It's, you know, the Clark campaign is just getting off the ground. It's a big part of what they do too. And, you know, I could go down the list, but I just think that